that I didn't dance in your eyes.
You forgot me this way, say. What are you gonna do about it? What are you gonna do about it? You got me this way, crazy boy.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror!
Hello, New Year's freaks! It's your old pal, the Crypt Keeper. I got up early this New Year's Eve to watch this week's movie. And it's 3 minutes to 9 a.m. and I'm drunk. Anyway, yeah, I'm partying my ass off because this movie's got it all. Stupid cops. Bad edits! Cheesy acting! Plot holes! Boobies! Tracheotomy talk! And a complete lack of knowledge of musical genres. Yes, I am of course talking about New Year's Evil. And now the countdown. 40,000. 39,998.
39,997. Hello, everyone, and Happy New Year! You're spending your New Year's with the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. I am one of your co-hosts, Mr. Luke Giaconetti. I want to thank everyone for downloading and listening to the show tonight. And I can't do this alone. What kind of New Year's party would that be? So over there, swallowing deviled eggs like they're going out of fashion, it's two True Freaks OG Chris Honeywell.
There's enough evil here to fill... Yes, Valley?
Valley? I'll have more to say about that in a minute. You heard him there, too. The one guy dancing by himself way too early in the night. It's the hair metal hero, Chris Tyler.
Ernie, baby, do me a favor. Drop a lute and relax, huh?
And rounding out our little shindig, as it were, the guy that has put away... I've never seen a man eat so many chicken wings. My brother, Mr. Jason Giaconetti.
I'm a man of God, not a man of violence. Stab, 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 stab.
Yeah. Okay, so if you
my,
can't...
My runner-up was, I think I have a mental disorder.
But my the line I had, hit the other buttons! Hit the other buttons!
Oh, well, there's also, when a girl doesn't have a date on New Year's Eve, she's in shit city.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my gosh. So, yeah, you know it by now, I'm sure. We're taking a look at 1980s. Yeah, guessed it from the famous quotes from 1980s. New Year's Evil. So, all I'm going to say is this, okay? So, this is a Golan Globus joint. That's right. It's from our good friends, Yoram Globus and Menahem Golan from Canon Film Group, because of course it is.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Of course. And I'm going to tell you the two stars, okay? The main star is Pinky Tuscadero from Happy Days. And then the other main name star was one of the motorcycle cops from Magnum Force. And I'm just going to leave it at that, because that's like the most Golden Globus thing I could say right now.
This was a collection
look what we get for the
of
picture.
Like,
get that motorcycle
70s,
cop.
80s actor names like Kip Niven and Grant Kramer.
Oh, my goodness gracious. So I am to blame for this one. I take full responsibility for this. We always try to get... You know, you try to be topical, right? I say it all the time. Who can't be topical? And there's a million Christmas-themed horror movies. Well, I said, you know what? There's other holidays in December, okay? And so why don't we do a New Year's one? And so New Year's Evil, it's a horror wreck hanger on that's been kicking around for years. You can find it on various different services. And I fully confess, I had never seen this. Like, I knew the plot. Yeah. I knew the plot involved the guy on the phone. Calling a DJ and killing people at midnight. I remember that. Like, I'd read that. I'd never seen this. Jay, you kind of set us up, because you said, oh, we gotta use the song from this. I'm like, well, that's a good thing to know. And then as soon as you turn the movie on and this song starts, it's like, well, hot diggity daffodil, we're in business now, baby, because this song friggin' rocks.
You're gonna hear it multiple times.
Yeah. So
I've actually seen this movie before this viewing, and so as soon as it come, I'm like I know I've seen this, and I actually own this collector's edition Blu-ray, and I put it on, and I go to myself going, oh yeah, I remember, like I knew I'd seen it before, and I'm like, oh, and it all came flooding back to me, because I was kind of remembering this and Christmas Evil, because one time TCM Turner Classic Movies showed them together as a holiday double pairing. Why? No one knows, but they did.
I'm gonna jump in. It's like neither of these films were produced by Turner. Or neither classic. Of them are classics. Yeah. And there's debate whether or not they're actual movies or not.
Exactly.
I legit threw this thing on, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, this it was as skeezy as a porno and filmed worse than a porno.
Yeah.
I was getting vibes of Planet Terror on it, you know, which was purposely filmed like that.
Mm-hmm.
But there, I honestly think maybe Rodriguez, like there's a scene where he goes into the mental hospital and the nurse is walking down the hall and the door opens on her, and the way it's cut, the like awkward edits and stuff. I was just like, this is just feels like watching Planet Terror, you know, except it's not purposely trying to be like this.
Right.
And Chris, you're absolutely right. There's the other scene with the nurse walking down the hallway in the sanitarium where it's just her walking. It's got to be like 20 seconds of her walking. It's like, yep, keep coming. This was
a 65-page script, and they somehow managed to get 85 minutes out of it. I don't know how.
That her walking down, I'm like, this is brilliant, right?
Well, band footage always puts you over the top with this, and you know, and somebody's nephew. There were enough producers' nephews in bands that they could around L.A. that they could sign up for this, you know, that never went anywhere.
So I will say that according to Wikipedia, the band Shadow, right? was an actual band. I'm trying to find where it is here. So they were not really a new age band, as you could tell, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't play. So they were apparently, I'm reading this straight from Wikipedia, Shadow, a long hair touring rock band from Kennewick, Washington. Okay. Which is, you know, right on there on the southwest bank of the Columbia River. Heard about a casting call for a new age punk band to play live in a movie, cut their hair in audition, landing the role of the featured band out of 50 bands.
Good for them.
Wait, they beat out 49 other bands?
They must have. So other bands must have been fucking garbage, dude.
That's what I'm saying. How bad you gotta be?
I mean, they got the other band that's on the soundtrack is a band called Made in Japan. And we hear them. They play the song Dumb Blondes, and then they get introduced later to play the song Banzai, which is actually not on the soundtrack, apparently. So,
what's the point then?
I don't know. Why do you put songs in your movie that are not on the soundtrack? I ask you this, film producers. But anyway, people walking down hallways, band footage, the worst, like, okay, so the copy of this I watched, it's, if you go on the Internet Archive and search for New Year's Evil, you will find that Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, covered this film on the movie Macabre on New Year's Eve in like 1983, right? And some very thoughtful person has reconstructed that episode by taking the bits from the movie Macabre and splicing them into a DVD rip of the movie, right?
Oh, God.
So it's like watching, so you're watching New Year's Evil, but then the quality will jump from, you know, like 480p to taped off of a broadcast, right? For Elvira to come and be like, oh my God, you know, and just talk to you for a few minutes, right?
Hey, that's fine, because at least you got her tits to stare at.
Dude, I love it, because she makes this movie so palatable. She's, first off, I love Elvira. We covered her movie. We know that.
But we would cover her nonstop.
Well, it also helps, right, that there was a recurring joke on her show about her friend, The Breather. Right. That
yes.
And what yes. is basically like The Breather, the movie, right? So
how was that?
I
not
gotta
the
say
Elvira
that at least the one person that could somewhat act for this movie they made into the killer.
Mm-hmm.
He's having a great time, but
he was flipping me out because depending on how the lighting was or what was going on, he either looked like Adam West.
Yes.
Like Wish.com Adam West or Wish.com Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh my God.
Or sometimes some copy of either of them. And it was just, it was, and then when the son was having his mental issues and put his mom's red stockings over his face.
He looked like
Steve Martin in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels playing
Ruprecht the Monkey Boy.
Yeah.
Yes. He looked like Steve Martin doing his Ruprecht act. And so that, but I mean, Pinky Tuscadero was just terrible in this. Just terrible.
She was not good,
worst MC ever of a show. Like,
I did
kind of low energy, too old to be doing, being
even
the punk
the,
rock.
Crust punk / new wave look they tried to like it's I'm not buying it dude I'm not
no
buying.
It was no, it was no I sense. Wasn't buying anybody's punk look in this movie at all
here's
all
the thing
punk rock.
If your band has a flying V as for one of the guitars, you're not a punk band.
You're not punk by definition. And the thing is that, you know, punks and metalheads, That was turf war, man. That was the streets
right.
in Los Angeles.
It took Motorhead to unite us.
Yeah. Hero and I were talking about this before you guys got on, before we started, and it's like none of the music was punk. None of it was either with the main band, they sounded like this like a heavy, have you ever heard of the band Captain Beyond? They were. I think there were a couple people from Deep Purple. Rod Evans from Deep Purple was in it,
right.
and every song is like, you know, 15 different parts to it, and so they sounded like, you know, prog heavy rock band, but they're all dressed up punk rock in that 80s. This is what punk rockers look like. They all remind me of the one punk rock guy in that old 80s TV show Square Pegs just like, yeah, exactly. It was, you know, just, you know, some 40-year-old, you know, costume person at the time was like, oh, you got to make us up 100 punk rockers. And she's like, okay.
You could have walked around New York for 2 hours and found a million punk bands that would have done a fucking movie for free that would have been real punk
yeah.
bands.
Yeah,
But that almost adds to it, right? Because we see movies like that, not necessarily horror movies, but we see like exploitation films and like teen exploitation films a lot, mm-hmm. right? Where they get they've read about the trend. Their kid right. told them about the trend, but they don't know about the trend. So they make their square version of the trend, right? I'm thinking like,
yes.
you know, Rad or Thrashing.
That's amazing.
I love Rad, but Rad is a square's idea of what BMX
it is. It is.
Yes.
It's square's idea of what skateboarding is. I'm thinking like Roller Boogie, right? Roller Boogie is a square's idea of what roller disco was. I swear, you know? I told somebody, I swear, I'm not making this up. I told, we had a big bunch of people, our local comic shop, Borderlands, in Greenville, South Carolina. If you're ever in the upstate, please check out Borderlands. They're a great shop. They have their creatively named big annual sale. And it's always, the big annual sale is almost always the Saturday before the Super Bowl, right? And it's been a tradition going back to when I was an undergrad at Clemson University, okay? A long time ago, you know, before the last great ice age, okay? So we always get a bunch of people together and we go to the sale and we always go out to lunch. And we went to this Indian place. It's right down the street. And there's a big, long table with all of us sitting. So I'm talking to some people I haven't talked to in years, right? And I'm talking to, I just watched Roller Boogie. And I said, it's literally a movie that stars Linda Blair, who learns to go disco dance on roller skates so that she can, you know, that's how she rebels against her super rich parents. So she falls in love with the, you know, poor kid who's a really good roller dancer.
So it's Dirty Dancing?
Right. Except it predates Dirty Dancing.
That's right. Back.
And I said, and then the bad guy is an evil developer who's going to redevelop the roller rink. And they're like, well, of course it's an evil developer. But that's a square's idea of what roller skating was, right? And so that's what we get here. This is a square's idea. This is someone who read an article about new wave music and thought, oh, yeah, okay, I know what that is. Sure, I read that article in Variety. I know what's going on, you know? And so they throw it into a script and use it as a gimmick, right, and put a band on there and have a bunch of songs and stuff and then build a framework around it to make a murder mystery, which to me, the murder mystery side of this is not half bad. I think it's pretty decent. No. It's all the stuff around it that's so ridiculous that makes this movie just insane.
I mean, it could have been one of those great one crazy night movie, you know, unfolding in real time.
Yeah, big things, ensemble,
but it's just so clumsy about everything that it's doing. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I enjoyed the hell out of it because it was, mm-hmm. I was like, okay, this is terrible. I'm all in. Yeah. Let's see how terrible this can get. And it didn't disappoint.
How many Clemson are we going to get? Okay. I just talked about Clemson. You put it at the top of the show, Chris. You said there's enough evil to fill Death Valley. Eh?
Yeah.
Right there. And you just said you're all in. Eh? Dabo Sweeney right there. I'm just saying. So
well, go Tigers.
That was... That line is like chef's kiss to me because it's like he does the like, and I'm like, okay, some good lines come out. He goes Death Valley. And I'm like, oh, that was terrible. That's a terrible line. And then, but then there's moments like where they go to the liquor store and there's that big black clerk there. And he's like the most earnest. You be careful now, you know. You have a good new year. And it's like, what is going on here? You know, it's like some movies have nice little moments of character acting and stuff. This just has nice little moments of awkward, dumb things happening. Yeah. Like, officer, I think there's a drunk over here. And then the cop's just like, ooh, a drunk.
I loved that liquor store for the giant Schlitz malt liquor sign in the window.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
And right after that, you know, after the whole scene with the liquor store, the cops find the body on the playground, the first girl, right? And then they find her roommate and they wait until they find her roommate's purse and then she slides down the slide?
Yeah.
How does that work?
Somehow
gravity. Gravity.
Yeah. I mean, and in that short period of time, he took them both out of the dumpster and then arranged them in the playground. He's like, oh, she's gonna slide down. I better set this so she slides down the second the cops get here.
Yeah.
We've learned anything from all the horror movies we've now watched, and was it like 15 years now? However long it is, like
it's longer than that. I think we started before I had kids.
Yeah. Well, shit. I still had hair. my balls weren't as low. Look, we all know 80s killers position the victims.
Position the victims. That's right.
That's what it is. Got to create that tableau.
Now, I will say this. So I do love that this being set in 1980 and having supposedly to do with a new wave, DJ and radio show. But it's still 1980, right? And so he goes to a disco, right? And he puts on the disco stash and the medallion. He looks like, Dr. McCoy from Star Trek, the motion picture, right? And then goes in there and has to go to the disco. And the girl he picks up, we've covered, as you say, Hero, we've covered a lot of movies. And there's been a lot of characters I've wanted to kill or to kill. The bimbo from Akron, Ohio.
Oh, God.
Who's in transcendental meditation. I wanted to jump through the screen and strangle her. Because it's bad enough that you're into transcendental meditation. It's bad enough. But you're also from fucking Ohio. You know? And it gets to the point where it's like, enough is enough. Right? It's time for a change. And so I was like, yeah, good. Good on you. Yeah, suffocate her with a plastic bag. You do that.
Please do that, crazy guy.
Yeah.
Although what got me through this movie was the soundtrack, like not the bands, but whenever, trouble was brewing and killing was on the horizon, they had the Friday the 13th ripoff music,
Yes.
But when it went, it sounded like somebody in a public restroom, like in a stall, like clearing their throat. And the first time I heard it, I'm like, that is not scary. That just sounds like somebody going in a stall. And they did it like three times after, and each time it somehow sounded more like that and more comical. So I was just waiting. I was waiting through like the whole movie. I was on, with bated breath for the next, and sometimes they would just do the little, musical cues, musical echoes of it. And I'm like, come on, get the guy. And I'd be like, yeah, there it is. It had that reverb, and like reverb can sound scary or it can sound like you're in a bathroom stall. And
well, again, it is, full spoilers on, it's the husband and the dad. Who's the killer, right? So, of course, he's got to make dad noises like.
The dad
got to sneeze really loud, right? And then cough for 5 minutes.
Jack of all trades, like master of elevator control.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
It's important.
He does just about everything. He does it pretty well, except apparently not watch where he's. Why? Okay, so he's driving.
He was the human version of Hugo, Man of a Thousand Faces, if you ever remember that toy.
Yep.
Now, there's a toy that needs to be turned into a movie right there.
Yes.
Right?
They did it. It was called Dana Carvey, Master of Disguise.
That's right.
Am I not turtly enough for the
Turtle Club? God, what a misstep that was.
Movie was like 68 minutes long, right? But anyway.
Does it even qualify?
I think they said they do a bunch of like outtakes to try and stretch it out, right? But anyway, the master of disguise. But the guy does everything well, except I don't. Why is he looking at a magazine about the Catholic Church when he rear-ends the biker? I don't understand what he's even doing there.
What do we got? What do we got for props? We got this.
Okay.
That was I think the most action packed part. I liked that part of the movie because he'd been going on without a hitch, and as soon as he rear-ended the bikers, it just became
crazy.
A nice chaos chase with him. Yeah. He had bikers coming after him, then the cops. And the bikers brought the cops, and it was just like, All right, his luck turned a little. It was, you know, there's a little chase suit, you know, and that I was like, okay, this is picking up, but not really.
Well, no. I like that bit. And there's a couple of things I like there. First off, the biker, when the biker finds them in the drive-in, and he says, "Greetings, asshole." I love that. Because it's like I could see a biker saying that.
Oh, 100%.
But then
yes.
The blonde and her boyfriend are making out, and he goes, "Isn't it about that time?" She goes, "Maybe the next movie," which I thought was funny. But so they're watching the trailer, and the trailer they get is for a double feature of Blood Feast, okay, which is the first splatter movie ever, right? Blood Feast is a ridiculous movie about the resurrection. It's Herschel Gordon Lewis, and they're resurrecting the goddess Ishtar. It's a ridiculous splatter movie. But the other movie is Bloodbath, which is it's got Sid Haig in it, right? And that's about the most simplest way you can say it, because if I remember right, this film was shot in Yugoslavia by Roger Corman, but the film they shot was unusable, so they kind of recut it and added some more stuff and made it into like a vampire movie.
Yes.
Never works.
And so it sounds fantastic. Now, the thing is, on the copy I'm watching, Elvira breaks in at that point and says, "I think we covered both of those movies."
Okay. So hang on. Hang on one second, LP. Hang on. So the problem is the theater says it's showing Blood Feast, but the problem is the movie they're actually showing is The Red Queen Kills Seven Times, which is also distributed under the name Blood Feast, but it's not it's not the right Blood Feast. It's not Herschel Gordon Lewis's Blood Feast.
But the one they're talking about is Herschel Gordon Lewis's Blood Feast.
That's not what they show. That's not what they're showing, though. That's the problem. What's being shown is a different movie under the same title, Blood Feast. So, yeah, but that's fun. So Blood Feast is 63. The movie they're talking about, it's called Blood Feast, but it was also called The Red Queen Kills Seven Times. It's from 72.
I'm looking that up. So Blood Feast from 72 is La Noche de los Mil Gatos.
Ooh.
Night of a Thousand Cats.
I got cats. Or
Madame
Rosa
Usida Sete Volte. Yeah, that's the other name of it, too. Which means the Red Queen kills seven times.
Literal. I love this poster. This poster for La Noche de los Mil Gatos. Ooh. It says in Espanol, terror, suspenso, muerte.
Well, we all know what that is.
Terror, suspense, death. And it's got a bunch of cats on it.
All I know is that's about par for the course for this film. Right? Kind of thing. We're going to talk about Blood Feast. Okay. But we're not going to show Blood Feast. We don't have Blood Feast.
We have a Blood Feast.
And the prints they were showing at that drive-in were like pristine. They were super clear, crisp. And it was just like, that was the only part that I was like, that doesn't feel very drive-in like.
I mean, I would love to go to the New Year's Eve Spookathon, as it's called, at the Van Nuys Drive-In, right?
Yeah.
Good old Van Nuys. Go down to Van Nuys Boulevard in a van. Shout out to the Grind Bin. But no, I do like that, because a lot of times you get that kind of cliche where the killer is, especially someone like this who's like super competent, right?
Right.
That they do everything perfect and there's never a screw up. Well, I like that this guy screwed up
a lot,
right? He screwed up and then he was on the friggin' run. And like you said, and then.
Well, at first he was a perfection. He was not only getting his kills on time. And I liked that they were like, if we have him killing at midnight, he only gets to kill one person. So we got to have him killing across time zones. But he was. I mean, not only was he getting his kills in on time, he was getting laid just before, you know, he was getting some just before each one. True. For some reason, he was so magnetic in his portrayals of his multiple personalities.
If you have champagne and you drink it in a hospital Dixie cup, you're going to get some.
Yeah.
From my experience.
Yeah.
I mean, who hasn't been there? He's given off this like 100% Ted Bundy vibe, and all the ladies are down for it, which is accurate.
Why do you think all the women watch all that true crime stuff? Right. They're just looking for ideas, you know.
True.
What should I look for in a
guy? Why do you think the Night Stalker got married and had a kid while he was in
plausible prison, deniability? That's why.
I mean, we've all seen Henry, right? We remember what goes on with that.
So, real quick, I just want to throw this in there. We had mentioned, obviously, Chris had mentioned before, it kind of reminded him of Planet Terror. This was actually selected by Quentin Tarantino to show at his New Beverly Cinema in L.A. on December 29th, 2018, where they showed this from a 35mm print, which... I mean, I'm sure he spent some money on getting a 35mm print of this movie.
We're gonna watch New Year's Evil, okay? It's just really, it's crazy, okay? You're not gonna know what's gonna happen because it's got this twist, right? It's so great.
I would be more entertained, I think, by hearing Quentin Tarantino explain whatever, you know, reason he had for why he loved this movie so much. Than actually watching the movie. Quentin Tarantino annoys the hell out of me too.
I love his movies. I would never want to sit down and have a beer with him.
No, he seems like you just want to slap him in the friggin' head, you know.
He's always going to be one of the Elvis impersonators from that episode of The Golden Girls to me.
Yeah. Well, so the other day, I picked up. You know, during sales and stuff like that, like Black Friday sales and other different things. I got Reservoir Dogs, the 4K Reservoir Dogs, right? So I popped it on to see what it looked like, you know, and like, cleaned up, right? Well, the opening scene, Haley had never seen this. Like, Haley's never seen Reservoir Dogs.
Gosh. So
she's like, Nana, she's like, they're just talking, Dad. I'm like, just shut up and listen. And when Quentin Tarantino's doing the whole thing about, yeah, he's doing the whole thing about like a virgin or whatever, and I'm like, oh my god, that's right. This is because I know the lines, I know what he's gonna say, I know the whole scene, right? But it's like, yeah, but that's what he sounds like. That's what he sounds like all the time. Yeah, acting.
That's just him.
See, but in 1992 or whenever Reservoir Dogs is, right, you wouldn't know it's just him. But now we're like, wait, that's just him. That's not even acting. Yeah. That's just him.
Right. The odd
At
thing
least
I will
he knows
say
when
that,
he's him in a movie, he portrays himself as a dick, as an annoying person.
Yeah.
In all or fairness, a foot fetishist.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. From Dusk Till Dawn, that's probably the best role he's ever been in any movie. And there he has to get killed, which is great because, you know, George Clooney kind of carries him through that.
Yeah.
I'll say about Reservoir Dogs again, my kids have never seen it, but they know. Cough up, you know, cough up a buck, you cheap bastard. I paid for your breakfast. At least you can do is chip in for the tip. And
I wouldn't normally, because you'll pay for it, but I wouldn't normally do it. I don't give a shit what you normally would do.
Never mind what you would normally do.
Lawrence Tierney.
That was so good because he wasn't even supposed to be in that. I think that was, there was supposed to be somebody else and they canceled out or they didn't work out on the set and they got Lawrence Tierney, and I think that was that's almost the best. Whenever you get Lawrence Tierney, you're doing really good.
Yeah. He's Elaine's dad on Seinfeld.
Yeah.
God, he was Elaine's dad.
The funny part is my ass
Festivus.
Yeah, for the rest. I have a poster. It's not up currently, but I have a poster up, and it's the entire scene where Mr. White's talking to where he's talking about the bank, you know, kind of thing, what you do to the bank, whatever kind of thing. And it's like, you know, I'm hungry. Let's get a taco. And it's literally the entire scene, like all the lines of the scene, all in a poster. And everyone's like, that's like the weirdest poster ever. I'm like, it's the best poster. And they're like, why? I'm like, you got to read it. I'm looking to see if I can find out who was supposed to be the line, who was being not him.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Well, but to say, like I said, having never seen this before, just kind of knowing the plot sort of going in, I'm with you, Chris. I mean, this is not a good movie by any stretch, but I was entertained for the entire running length of this.
I wasn't bored.
No, not bored. It definitely didn't break my brother's rule. Don't be boring. It certainly wasn't boring.
Yeah.
Right. And chaining somebody up inside of an elevator shaft. I'll give him props for that. I hadn't seen that one before. Yeah,
that's a new one.
That's new. And it's old now, but well, yeah. Yes, it was new for me. It's like, you know, that Manson guy here, he watches TV all the time.
It's new to me.
It's new to me. I haven't seen it. It's new to me. But the two people freaking out in the elevator made it all the better, right? Because it's like, what's their deal, right?
They're so drunk they can't even get up off the ground. They're just laying in the elevator.
You got to push the other buttons. Everybody knows that. Haven't you seen Earthquake? They don't get in the elevator, right? You know.
Yeah. You know, it's funny.
I love that scene in Earthquake. By the way, that is freaking hilarious. The story behind the filming of that scene is insane. That's what they came up with, is spray cartoon blood at the screen and go, oh.
Whatever works, man.
It's like the end of the Cassandra crossing, right?
Yeah.
Anybody, have you ever seen that? It's like, okay, we've watched this movie about this train that supposedly has a virus on it, and their solution is we're going to send this train over a bridge that we know is going to collapse. Okay.
Virus.
I understand that. But the virus is actually not as bad, and people start recovering, but they're still going to send the train over the bridge. And, you know, the heroes manage to uncouple the cars with them on them, and all the other people go over this bridge that collapses, and it's
there was nothing we could do.
Yeah. I don't recommend the Cassandra crossing, but the last, like, 2 minutes or so are brilliant. If you want to see people getting smashed in a train derailment with no context, I do though. I shouldn't be laughing at this, but
reading my mind.
Well, it's like somebody took that thought experiment. Do you throw the switch for the trolley and kill one people or 100 people? Like, what? Here it is.
Well, maybe we can just kill half of them.
It's like in I saw a great one of that thought experiment where it was Wile E. Coyote and he pulled the switch and a train car ran over him.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I was a bitch.
Oh, Wile E. Coyote, who's not in this movie, unfortunately. But,
oh, man. Be a lot cooler if he was.
Yeah.
Well, I do like the Bob Hope mask that the killer wears at one point.
What the fuck?
And again, it's like, you know, Point Break, you hack. I mean, right? I mean, that's...
Right,
you know,
exactly.
We're on the road to a murder. We're on the road... At the end, it's like we're on the road to Hawaiian New Year's.
Hawaiian New Year must be crazy, right?
Everybody
danced around with coconut halves over their breasts. I mean, that one time I went to that luau, I thought that it was just me, right? I mean, that was friggin' embarrassing as hell.
Oh, crap. What am I going to do with all this poik?
It's bull semen. I know bull semen. Wow. I taste bull semen. That's bull semen.
That, my friend, is bull semen.
You know your dentist theory.
The other question I have is, how does he manage to get through each time if so many people are calling?
Yeah,
right. I mean, I've never managed to get through on John Boy Billy Jeopardy, right? I can't get through John Boy Jeopardy. This guy's getting through multiple times on this. What's up with that?
Off a payphone, hanging out in a payphone.
In all fairness, as someone who used to be a regular caller to the Taz show, it's very hard to get through when it's the topic going on. There's some days I would get through, except the one time when Taz said I needed to call back in because he didn't like something I put in the chat, and they cleared the line so I could call in so he could yell at me on the air. But I'm just saying, which is really funny.
You know, still an interaction.
Well, I did get yelled at on the air. It was really funny. So, but I'm being serious. Like Luke's right. It is hard to call into any show. Like, maybe if it was like, and I understand, it's like, but Jay, it's midnight. But that's what everyone's up at this point. It's not like I'm like a random Wednesday in like November. It's New Year's Eve.
It was apparently the most popular show in the world, too, because it was on every single
K-Rock.
TV.
You mentioned K-Rock. I mean, like, that's, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
K-Rock got a shout. Yeah, I love that they're showing it to the patients at the sanitarium.
Yeah.
Are they hoping
this movie's got a lot of points for giving a realistic and sensible view of mental illness. it was spot on what.
If sensitive, it was.
But you know,
nuanced,
hey, that scene where he's with his wife at the end, you know, near the end, and he's doing his whole spiel. I had the whole meme in my head when the villain's low key making a lot of sense.
Any woman that listens to the show is going to be writing me hate mail now.
Hold, especially if wait a minute. Wait, what woman listens to this show? I ask.
None that I am aware of.
Freakvault@gmail.com. Are you a
if you are a woman, please.
Are you a lady? Not a lady man.
Not a lady man.
Guy with the hiding guy.
But if I'm assuming very few girls listen to this show, but if you're a woman and you listen to this show, I'm legitimately curious. I'm not even being a jerk. I'm curious because I've always assumed our audience is male because we've only ever interacted with male listeners. And I mean that seriously. I'm not making a joke or anything like that. All the feedback we've ever gotten have been from male listeners. So if there are any female listeners out there, I'd love to hear from you because I'm legitimately curious.
If you're related to us or already know us in real life, you don't count.
I can honestly say no female member of my family has ever listened to this show.
I don't think anybody I know has ever listened to any of my shows. Probably just as well. I'd be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. Other than occasionally you'll hear my wife yell something from the other room, right?
Oh, like, you hear Maureen and her mother cackling in the background of all these
reports. Or Kelly snoring away next to me, because that's been on a couple of, she snores so loud I don't fucking move.
It's like the meme cat under the blanket. You're not watching the movie. Yes, I am. And the cat would fall asleep.
Yep.
Just resting my eyes.
So I'm trying to find who either turned down or whatever from Reservoir Dogs for Lawrence Tierney. I'm not finding it. I'm finding some interesting ones, but not that one. Although he was eventually fired, which is why some of the scenes were cut with him in it.
Yeah. Isn't that why? Was it Nice Guy Eddie? Isn't he in certain scenes because it was supposed to be his dad? And it's Nice Guy Eddie instead.
He's on the phone with him. Explain. Goes. I know, Dad. I'm telling you. They had to reshoot things. Well, that's what's his name? Eddie.
Chris Penn.
Eddie Bunker. No, Eddie Bunker. He's supposed to have like two other scenes in the movie with Lawrence Tierney, but they fired him, or because he couldn't remember his lines at all.
Right.
And then he was fighting with Tarantino. So Tarantino had to fire him because you're putting us over budget. It was literally because he wasn't trying to be mean, just he put us over budget. But
budget.
It wasn't that he couldn't remember his lines. I think the story was he just refused. He just refused to learn lines and was just like, just
like
write
Adam
them down
West
on a
zombie nightmare.
Yes.
Oh God, that one. Yeah.
Another rock and roll movie for you, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, since the guy, like, getting back to this, that reminds me of the killer sort of looking like Adam West, another celebrity lookalike. Remember when the killer finally gets to the where they're doing the show, and they have the guy, the punk rock guy, who's like, I gotta get in before New Year's. I'm looking at that guy. And then I heard his, and I'm looking at him, I'm like, that looks like Andrew Dice Clay. Then I heard his voice, and I'm like, oh, it's Andrew Dice Gay.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
So it's like you mix Andrew Dice Clay and Eddie Deason. Is that what you're trying to say here?
I hate that I'm old enough.
So if there's any gay people who listen to the Vault of Heart Startling,
please write into Freak Vault. Care of Chris Honeywell at
you guys can team up with the women and picket us or not team up with the women and not listen to our show.
You know, look, again, I say this over on Earth Destruction Directive when it gets recorded that you know the show is for everyone. I assume that
but
that's the thing, the show isn't, because we cover a lot of nonsense. A lot of ethical stuff, but that's
so we all see a lot of naughty words, and not everyone can hear all those naughty words.
No,
so
I'm not by saying the show is for everyone. I don't mean that it's all ages. What I'm saying is that, you know, if all are welcome, right? We're not saying, oh, you're not a big enough horror fan if you haven't seen New Year's Evil. It's like, for fuck's sake, people. It's New Year's Eve, okay?
Everybody's on a limited timeline in life. You only got so much time.
Right.
I mean, the people who haven't seen New Year's Evil are colloquially referred to as the lucky ones. So, you know.
That's what we do. We cover this shit so you don't have to. That's
you
what
don't so, have to.
So you don't have to. We still, for you. I don't know what service it's on, but okay. My oldest daughter is she's a budding horror fan, right? And so we were scrolling through the horror movies and Birdemic. Then and it said we want to see the trailer to Birdemic. Like, no, you don't.
No, you don't.
They watched the trailer to Birdemic, and now my younger boy constantly is asking to watch Birdemic. I'm like, we are not watching Birdemic. It's not happening. It's like, but they made like four of them. I'm like, I know they made sometimes, four of them. We're not watching them.
Sometimes kids have to, eventually they have to learn that be careful what you wish for lesson, you know, and that might be the learning.
Okay,
I'm going to say this. Birdemic is hard to get through. It is hard. And that's watching it rift, and it's still tough. But like, I'm trying to think. Like, Baby Ghost was really hard to get through. There's a few others that are just like completely like. There's no, I don't know. It's just god awful.
But they're so amateurish that it's hard to even watch. Right? It's one thing to watch a bad movie that's at least competent. I mean, again, New Year's Evil is a great example. This movie's competently made. It's not good.
It's not good.
An easy 90-minute watch. Sit down with a, you know. I would sit down with a cup of your favorite beverage. I mean, for me, it was coffee because I was watching it in the morning, right? But it's like, sit down with a glass of your favorite beverage and enjoy. This is, you know, that's one thing I'll give this film. It's competently made and it's easy to watch. It's not some of the dreck that we wade through sometimes where it's like, good gracious, how did seriously, how did this honestly get made? You know, I'm thinking the, you know, like the Hereditaries and the remake of Suspirias of this world that it's like and we get told how amazing they are by people who don't, you know, don't really know the difference between their ass and a grapefruit.
Bullshit lies.
Yeah. Bullshit and lies in big letters.
Before you guys got on, I was telling Hero about this book that I got at a used bookstore. It's called Television, 1970 to 1980. And it's a big encyclopedia of every TV show that aired in America between 1978 or 70 and 1980. And then it has a section of all the like variety shows, and then it's got another section of all the pilots that ever came out.
Oh my gosh.
And let me tell you, if you want to talk about dreck, the 70s were just like this prime TV dreck time, and I'm finding Mrs. Columbo. When you get into Saturday morning cartoons, after Star Wars came out, and then all of a sudden, like, Casper the Friendly Ghost is in space. And there's like a, this book is pre-internet, but now with the internet, once you know about what these shows are, you can just hop right onto YouTube and be like, that sounds like a fever dream. And then you look at it and go like, this is a fever dream, but it's worse than I could even ever have imagined, you know, every spin-off show, every, you know, just variation of whatever the weird things. Like, there was a kids cartoon called Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kids.
Oh, yes. Christ. I know that
right?
one.
And they were like international, like, crime fighting kid force.
Wait a minute, the original stuff was.
Well, you know, the 70s were a big cocaine time. So, there were a lot of just horrible pitch meetings of just like, okay, what's hot? We'll make a kid's cartoon about it, set there, and, you know, Mrs. Columbo. And Mrs. Columbo, a spinoff of Columbo, without Columbo in it. The only reference to Columbo is in the credits. You see her cleaning the house and emptying all his ashtrays into their garbage disposal, which I didn't know is a thing you would do with cigarette butts. But that show didn't didn't make it long, but they were like, oh, we like Kate Mulgrew's portrayal of Columbo's wife. Let's just start a new show called Kate Loves a Mystery, and it'll be she divorces Columbo and goes off on her own with her daughter and solves mysteries. It's just like nobody
Brilliant.
Wanted
Five
this.
Seasons.
Nobody wanted this, guys. They didn't want the first Mrs. Columbo, and they don't want the spinoff of the spinoffs of spinoffs. It's amazing.
I think Stargate,
you know,
is the only
just the
show
sheer
where that
number
works.
Of spinoffs from All in the Family and from what was the other show that you know ended up with Maude and Rhoda and. I can't. Mary Tyler Moore?
Yeah. It was Mary Tyler Moore, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah. And just, you know, just spinoff after spinoff, and it's just like, man.
Of all the Mary Tyler Moore ones, I will say, I did like that one where Ted Baxter got the van and the group of kids, and they went around solving mysteries. That one was a lot of fun. It's underrated, the Ted Baxter mysteries. You should check that one out, right?
Baxter mysteries.
It's like, I knew it was you the whole time, old man Withers.
Here's the thing is, I got the book in my hand and I'm trying to look it up because it really could have happened. It really could have happened.
Dear Penthouse, you'll never believe what happened to me. I got a TV pilot.
Well, that's what the kid gets.
Okay,
from this.
Just randomly opening this book.
Pilot, doesn't he? That's what he tells, or he gets the series. That's what Derek is telling his mom, right? That he won the lead in this. What is it like?
Space America, or something.
Yeah, it's like, oh my god, it's like this is going to go about four episodes before it gets pulled and replaced with reruns of Mrs. Columbo. We all know that, okay, guys. But...
Mrs. Columbo.
She went, didn't she? They spun that off. She was solving mysteries in the Delta Quadrant, wasn't she? That was a good show. I loved
her
show.
Her annoying
in the
voice.
No, that's
like, I have a spot for the lives.
Somebody somewhere is writing fan fiction where, you know.
Ever see.
She's an ancestor of Captain Janeway, for sure.
Look, I think the people that write a lot of Star Trek fan fiction and ship different characters that would never happen already have problems. If you're writing Voyager fan fiction, you've got deep fucking problems.
Something's, yeah.
Voyager shipped most people together anyway, right? They shipped half the damn cast together. But I say this, that knowing in my heart of hearts that the most common slash fic that you're going to find for Voyager, 100% money on the table, is Tom Paris and Harry Kim.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
I know it, right? It's all there.
I've just opened up to a page right now. Here's a book. Here's a show called Sanford Arms.
Is it with Sanford and
Sanford
Son?
And Son.
Oh, Christ. Yep.
The story of Phil Wheeler, a widower and retired army man who purchases the Sanford and Son junkyard and turns it into the Sanford Arms rooming house with an investment to enable him to remain at home and properly raise his two children.
So it was the Golden Palace before the Golden Palace.
So basically it's a spin-off. Instead of taking a character, it's just they use the set. They're like, it's a spin-off of the Sanford and Son. And the same year that Saturday Night Live came out, you know what else came out? Saturday Night Live with Howard Cosell, which was a variety show.
Fuck?
Oh,
from the
boy.
Ed Sullivan
wasn't
Theater
Saturday Night
in New York
Live
City.
Just called, wasn't Saturday Night Live just called Saturday Night? And that...
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so that's okay, that makes sense. This is Howard Cosell. We've got a great show for you tonight. We've got Dan Aykroyd and Jane Curtin playing a couple of aliens that we think are regular Americans.
Adventurous, dynamic, and bionic. Lee Majors, he'll be with us tonight on Saturday Night Live.
Thank you, Howard, but I'm really looking forward to seeing the real $6 million man, O.J. Simpson.
He's worth $12 million.
He's got me drinking orange juice.
Plus 32 alive and kicking beautiful Radio City Music Hall rockettes surrounding Lee Majors.
I can hardly wait.
Tonight, 8 o'clock over many of these ABC stations.
just a side note, if the Saturday Night movie that they just came out with is worth watching... It was very entertaining. I watched that a little while ago. It's one of the
few sources. Yes.
Well, the one about National Lampoons that came out a couple of years ago was real good too. Oh, maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm the only one who's seen that.
I hadn't heard one way or the other on
I
that
one. I can't remember the a useless and futile gesture is the name of it. It is fantastic.
Oh, well, this one. I mean, I wonder if it I wonder if it has Michael O'Donoghue in it, because Michael O'Donoghue from National Lampoon is in it was a writer in Saturday Night Live, and he's in.
Oh, they touch on that big time in the National Lampoon movie.
Oh, I love
a lot of those guys going to SNL.
Now, when I was in high school, we called it National Lampoon. I'm a big fan of National Lampoon. I love that magazine, and I did not know that movie existed. And
let me correct. Futile and stupid gesture. That is the name of it. It is fantastic.
The characters, the actors who play all the Saturday Night Live cast are just unbelievably. Unbelievably sinking into their roles. The scenes with Belushi and Gilda Radner to get, you know, pallet around together. I was forgetting that I was watching actors portray. Right. And the actor who plays Jim Henson also plays Andy Kaufman, and it's glorious.
Aww, all right.
The scenes with Jim Henson are mwah.
Okay, I bet. Anything Henson related is usually pretty good.
Yeah. Well, we're getting a little
far afield.
I'm going to throw it. Jay, if you want to buy New Year's Evil, I know that this movie's on disc. Where would one, what options does one have for New Year's Evil?
All right. So New Year's Evil, what I have is the special edition put out by Scream Factory. That's usually about $18 or so. You can see it there. I would not waste my time on the $105 version.
What?
Which is the I'm not kidding. There's no 4K of it. There's a hundred. Yeah, it's just the exact. So they put it out, and then that disc went out of print, and then they did the special edition, right? So the out of print disc, which is not even cleaned up or any of this, and has none of the specials, so it's a bare bones $105 disc, or the $20. Special edition with all the everything you could possibly ever want about this movie is there. I'm sure you could probably track down a VHS somewhere if you want to get the Paragon Video VHS of it, because there was a Paragon Video of it, that kind of thing.
There's also the why buy the cow when the milk is free, because it's on YouTube, and as you were saying, it's on. It's on YouTube. It's just the regular version of it, but on Archive Diner, it sounds like the Elvira version is the version to watch.
I would agree.
I wish I would have seen that one.
Yeah. So it is available on YouTube. It is also on Pluto TV if you like your free ad-supported streaming services. And it, as I said, the archive.org one, just search New Year's Evil. You'll see it. It's in there with, like, it says, like, New Year's Evil, I think, like 12/31/1983, which was it. This same uploader has uploaded many episodes of the movie Macabre. Some of them appear to be just straight DV, like, you know, dubs off of the broadcast, right? So you get the movie in the same quality as Elvira, right? But this one, like I said, this one was somebody spliced it together, and it's a great combination. We had a couple of, it wasn't movie Macabre. It was when she was doing just a straight
VHS ones.
Straight VHS releases, where instead of, she would intro the movie, but instead of jumping back to her couch because she was throwing it to a commercial, she would actually pop up on screen and make a comment every now and again. Those were cute too. But this, like I said, this is straight movie Macabre, and it's a good Elvira movie, right? Because there's not too much to cut as far as gore anyway, right? If you were watching it on TV, there's a little bit of nudity, but not much really for 1980. But no, this, like I said, it's I enjoyed it. You know, if you need something silly at your New Year's party, it's a good fun movie to put on. Everyone will have a few drinks and be like,
you
"What
get your
the crudité
hell?" And your cheese balls and your
and
your Adam West Peters
and your chicken wings. You know,
let me fix this here. I said it was Scream Factory. I'm sorry, it's Kino Lorber. Studio Classics, but so
Kino Lorber, fancy. Ooh.
Fancy. Ooh. Well, that's how we get. It's got a 2K remaster of the movie. There's an audio commentary by the director. And there's also the making of New Year's Evil featuring interviews with the cinematographer and actors, Kip Nevin, Grant Kramer, and Taffy Connell.
Does it have uncut performances by Shadow and Made in Japan?
It does not. I mean, we could always hope for a 4K restoration with the new 4K release or something.
For Luke and I, Made in Japan is one of Iron Maiden's first EPs, and that's all it will ever be.
Right. Yeah, that has a totally different context.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying that's it. Yeah. But yeah, like they were saying, if you just want to see it, there's plenty of ways to see it without paying for it. I picked it up a couple of years ago, like again on one of the like times it's like a real big sale, like during Black Friday or deal days or whatever. They tend to blow out movies for like $4.99 kind of thing, $5.99. I'm like, brand new, yes, I'll take it, you know, kind of thing. So
yes, have some.
Well, speaking of hot DVD tips, I just want, this is totally unrelated except for expensive DVDs, if anybody out there is listening and you have a DVD copy of 28 Days Later, go sell that sucker on eBay for $100
now, because you know it's going to get a re-release with the new one coming out.
The sequel's coming out, and they're withholding it right now. It's not on any streaming services and stuff, and all the DVDs are going for like $150 on eBay, and they're going to probably drop it on all the. So it'll probably be.
It'll probably be cheap in 6 months.
In the months before the new 28 years later comes out, it'll be back on the market and back down to regular price. So you could sell your copy now, your DVD copy now, and then probably pick it up for $20-$30.
You know, America, still invest still in capitalism.
Make a nice little tidy profit. And then you
can buy multiple copies of New Year's Evil.
Yes, that's right.
If you so desire, yes. Because, you know, you wear those things out pretty quick, you know.
Give them to friends. Give them to enemies.
Okay, I was just going to say, give them to frenemies.
Mail one to somebody and then you get their phone number and call them up and go, I am evil, I sent you my movie.
and they're like, who's that on the phone? And it's like, I don't know, it's some guy. I think he's somebody with a tracheotomy or something.
You both think the same thing.
Dad, it's that creepy guy with a tracheotomy again.
I'm sorry, I have a weird voice.
I don't think 8-year olds drink beer.
Oh god. All right. We're getting real sticky here.
Yeah.
So
getting sticky with it.
Unstick yourself and have a happy new year.
Happy New Year.
Yeah.
You gotta rock it in with them Shadow right at the as the ball drops and grab your best girl.
Balls
and...
dropping faster than Heroes balls.
I told my wife, between gravity and us getting older, we're either gonna trip on your tits or my nuts. So
good God.
Sure to check out our new aging podcast, Tripping on Your Tits.
Tripping on Nuts. I ain't tripping balls. Wait, I am.
Tripping on balls.
Yep, oh, God. Yep. Tripping balls changes meaning as you grow older.
Holy fuck.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O-T-R-U-E-F-R-E-A-K-S. Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
I knew there was something I wanted to tell you. Ladies and gentlemen of the motion picture audience, we've had a lot of fun making our picture, and we certainly hope you've enjoyed it. But there's one thing I want to get clear in your mind. Remember Boris Karloff, Peter Lorre, Bela Lugosi? Well, they aren't really murderers at all. In fact, they are nice fellows and good friends of mine. You know, things like this don't actually happen. It's all in fun. And so we'll be on the air, as usual, next Wednesday night. And until then, we'll be thinking of you. So long, everybody.